Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
And Office 365.
And Office 365. And Office 365.
We're back for another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and over there, as usual, is my co-host and cohort, Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Yo.
Yo, he's gone all downtown Motown, have you?
Well, you know, it's one of those moods that I'm in. It's friggin' hot at the moment in Sydney. It's one of those swings. It's like a mood swing, and it's like my mood swings, where my mood comes and swings and goes up and down like the temperature. Like, those who don't come from Sydney, it's quite a strange place, because in summer, you get the really, really hot days, and all of a sudden, say, in 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 38 degrees, then it changes in within, say, 1 hour down to, say, 24 degrees when the southerly kicks in. And it's like, the best way to describe it is like somebody's turned the outside air conditioning on, like a massive air conditioner outside. Somebody just turned it on, and that's pretty much what it feels like, because you've gone from the super, super hot day to all of a sudden cool winds coming in. It's quite remarkable the way that happens, and it's quite a nice little experience, considering I grew up in southeast Queensland in Brisbane, which was always around 30 degrees, and it was really, really humid. So it's a bit different to most places in Australia, though. What do you reckon, Rob?
Yep, exactly. This used to be the Need to Know podcast, and now it's the weather forecast, by the sound of it. But unfortunately, no, you are correct. It has been very hot and sweaty, and it is part of living in the land down under. And I suppose that if it was snowy, cold, and blighting with wind, you'd also complain. So probably right in the middle of where you want to be.
When it gets cold. Yeah, when it gets cold in winter, it's too cold. Like, it's two extremes. But it just goes to show, you're right, it's downtown Australia, and when it is hot, it's because the wind comes from the west, or the northwest, and the wind is coming directly from the middle of Australia, and it is super, super hot at the middle of Australia.
Well, like I said, again, I don't think I'd change it for anywhere in the world. And Mark's a middle-of-the-road, average sort of single standard deviation, where I like to consider myself at least 10 standard deviations at one extreme. So luckily, we've got the variation here on the Need to Know podcast. And luckily, we have got some tech news to talk about. So why don't you kick off with some Azure news to keep the rest of our listeners interested in the podcast and tuned in?
Yes, on episode, what episode is this?
I think 128. I think it is 128.
Episode 128. We are going through these episodes super, super quick, because it's roughly twice per week with LI presenters we're going through as guests for our podcast. But yeah, basically what I've got this week is, or this time around, I should say, Azure Active Directory meets Power BI. So Alex Simmons from Microsoft has announced the new Power BI content pack for Azure Active Directory. With his integration of Azure Active Directory APIs with Power BI, you can easily download pre-built content packs and dig deeper into all the activities within your Azure Active Directory. All this data is enhanced by the rich visualization experience that Power BI offers. You can also create your own dashboard and share it easily with anybody in your organization. So more information on that on the show notes and in my blog site.
I must admit that I have tried this, and the integration for me on my tenant does not work. So I've tried it as many ways south as I possibly could, and still I'm having some difficulty connecting the Azure AD to Power BI. Now, The only difference in the mix may be because I have a partner tenant, so maybe that's got something to do with it, not a full commercial tenant, but I have to keep trying, but not having much luck. It just comes up and says that I can't authenticate. I'm sure it'll work itself out, but again, great option to really start digging into the Azure AD logs. Again, you'll get a certain component for free out of the box, which is something that we would encourage every IT pro to start connecting up to. So something worth playing with.
Okay, so what else is in the news? We've got Microsoft expanding the Azure machine learning availability. So customers in West Central region in the US can now use Azure's machine learning. It's Microsoft's cloud-based solution for creating analytic solutions. The availability brings the number of supported Azure ML regions to 7 globally.
Yep, lots and lots of regions. So, like I said, Azure's on a bit of a tear, and every time we see the map of the world, there's far more places on it that have Azure data centers, which is fantastic.
Well, they've got the main ones. So, Southeast Asia is always one of the big ones in relation to all the other, and West Central region as well, and West US is also quite a large one too. So they've got their majors around the globe, and what are they up to now? I think it's over 30 regions all up right now, but basically, yeah, they've got their major ones, and then they've got their sort of not so major ones. But then again, things like machine learning or Azure automation, which we announced on the podcast last time, you don't really need them in every single region, do you, Rob? Because it's not really specific to latency, and latency doesn't really take a factor when it or affect it in any way when it comes to using the service.
Well, I think there is the rational side, which you're talking about, and unfortunately there is also an emotional side. So a lot of people like to have data centers in their country because they believe that their local laws will protect them. Not really the case for most people, but I certainly understand their desire to have local data centers. But the reality is, if they are manned, maintained and provided by Microsoft, Microsoft is still subject to US law. So unfortunately, in the world of cyberspace, laws don't really obey geographic boundaries, but there is certainly an emotional feeling to have local data centers.
Yeah, there's always a way around, especially with the internet. It's all a globally connected world. Rob, I've got two more news articles here in the world of Azure, but how about I flick across to you in the land of Office 365?
Well, you've stole my thunder there with the one about the connection to Azure.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm used to it amongst your other stories and benefits of being on the podcast here. So what I might do is just dig into the bag of tricks here and come up with a site that Microsoft has let everybody know about. We've got a couple of ones here. They've got, for example, a Office 365 planned service changes in 2017. So basically what they're trying to do is let administrators know that there is going to be some action required. So a couple of these that we'll call out, we'll put the link in the show notes, is that Office Pro Plus 2013 availability and supportability will basically change on the 28th of Feb. So basically what that means is if you've got 2013 Pro Plus, you're going to need to upgrade to Office 2016. And what will happen is if you have and are using Office 2013 from Office 365 after the 28th of Feb, then you'll see those instances go into deprecated mode or read-only mode. They'll need to upgrade. So the rule of thumb is you get 12 months on the old version before you are required to upgrade, and that will be on the 28th of Feb for a lot of people. Project Online Change requirements are also changing, so that's another one. Also, the SharePoint Online public websites are going away. So back in the day, Office 365 used to have a public-facing SharePoint site that you could use for your internet presence. Microsoft deprecated that, and they are shutting that off on the 31st of March 2017. AD synchronization with DirSync is being deprecated. So DirSync, you really need to upgrade to Azure AD Connect. So again, really, really good idea. And RPC over HTTP is also being deprecated. But we'll put the link to this in the show notes for Office 365 admins so that you are prepared. But the big one is
Office Pro Plus 2013 is basically moving into the background, and you'll need to upgrade your instances on your desktop to 2016 from February 28.
People don't like change. It's a scary thing.
Well, but, I think, again, we've just got to get used to, a lot of these people still aren't used to this world where that we have constant upgrades. So we're getting Windows 10 constant upgrades. We're now into a period where you can't sort of buy and hold on to your software forever. It needs to be updated regularly. Again, it's a very good example. I've seen a lot of examples very recently, actually, of people who are still maintaining very old software. And guess what? Can't run PowerShell 3, doesn't support SMB file share version 3, and it becomes a very difficult system to work with if it's not kept up to date. So again, as much pain as there is, as long as
they can play bingo, there's probably the people that use their Windows 2000 computers, as long as the 16-bit bingo application can work, that's all they're worried about.
I just need to correct you there. It would not be bingo, it would be solitaire.
Whatever, it'll be one of those games, those very very basic games, which it's fit for a purpose, and they'll just,
all right,
it'll just go on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, much like this podcast, it seems. Now the other one, let me see if I can steal some of your thunder. Have you heard of the cloud platform roadmap?
Yes.
So would you like to talk about it?
You can if you want.
Thanks very much. So again, there's another good little website from Microsoft. The Cloud Platform Roadmap provides a snapshot of what Microsoft's working on in the cloud platform business. So again, pretty cool little website. It's got recently available, in public preview, in development, what's been canceled. So it's a bit like the Office 365 roadmap, if you've had a look at that. We've got things around cloud infrastructure, enterprise mobility, data management analytics, application development, and IoT. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes. Again, it seems to be all-encompassing, more focused on the Azure side of thing, what's coming. So think of it, I suppose, as a roadmap for Azure, much like we have the Office 365 roadmap. So what have you got on your side of the fence there, Mark?
Well, yeah, so I'll just quickly mention the roadmaps thing that you talked about just now. The accuracy of that roadmap, whether it's going to be, I mean, I've seen roadmaps before, and they are, I think they're more of a marketing sort of a spin on it rather than being accurate as such. I mean, it's all good to see, okay, this is what they're planning for the future, but it's whether or not that it's followed to the letter, it's a different story.
Well, I think
there's always things that change in the meantime.
Yeah, of course, but I think the important thing here is that it's letting people know what's coming, what's potentially happening, which is better than a lot of it just popping out untoward. So again,
that's what I mean. I agree. Like it's good in that respect, now, and that's why I like looking at them.
Of course, and because you're such an anorak and you want them down it to the nth degree, into the actual release date, time, and minute and second, this is probably not a website for you to frequent. This is probably a website more for the general IT pro management who wants to just get a general idea of what is coming down the pipe. So I certainly recommend that to you. And again, we say find your best information sources. For some people, it's really, really detailed. Other people, it may be just a general idea. So you have an idea of what's coming. And the main thing is you don't want to get surprised by some of these releases because, again, things change very, very fast in this cloud world. So again, we'll put the reference links into the show notes so that people do have that as an option.
Excellent. Now, collaboration and federation, changes to Azure Service Bus messaging for on-premises environments. Microsoft have announced they will not provide an immediate successor for the standalone on-premises Service Bus for Windows Server 1.1 product. The product available, or was available as a free download, will go out of mainstream support on January 9, 2018. Future on-premises messaging capabilities will be delivered in the context of Azure Stack, where Microsoft can deliver a consistent experience with the public cloud services as well. So basically the public cloud and the Azure Stack will be kept in sync. Makes so much sense.
Well, again, the more information, the better, obviously. And again, we'll put all the details in the show notes to make sure that does happen. And I think that probably with that, we probably need to get into our...
Not yet. I got one more.
One more? Oh, I don't know. You better say that. We've got a lot of podcasts we've got to turn out. But if you've got one more, how about we'll let him do it?
One more, announcing the availability of Clear Linux OS in the Azure marketplace. So Microsoft have announced the Clear Linux distribution of the OS. It's for Intel architecture. So it's currently in the Azure marketplace as we speak. So Microsoft Azure is the first public cloud provider to offer Clear Linux, and Clear Linux OS is a free open source Linux distribution built from the ground up for cloud and data center environments and tuned to maximize the performance and value of Intel architecture.
Excellent. All right. Any more?
That's it.
Excellent.
I'm surprised with the amount of podcasts we're pushing out, twice the usual amount, twice the capacity, and we've still got news.
Well, I think it goes to show the rate at which these services are improving and are adding items, and that's a good thing. And I think also it shows you what we can come up with when we're really pushed and we have a lot of podcasts to get out the door. So I think that's a good thing, and hopefully everybody who's listening is getting lots of benefit from the information we're providing now on a very regular basis. And why don't we let people know what's the best way to ask us questions or to get more information?
Well, you can follow us on Twitter. So it's N2K Podcast, as in the number two. So it stands for need to know. So at N2K Podcast, which is on Twitter, or the email address, Rob, is?
Good question. Can't remember. Something at need to know cloud.
It's feedback.
That's it.
At need to know.cloud. Or if you want to check out all our podcasts, we've got another link as well. It's podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
I'm not into email. Don't believe in email. It's the devil's work. We also have a special offering. While we have all these podcasts with all these fantastic presenters from Microsoft Ignite, and
you mean a promotion?
The promotion, if you want to call it a promotion. What's our promotion?
Well, it's easy. So with our Twitter account or Twitter handle, which is N2K Podcast, every single time we publish a podcast live on the internet, or when you publish it, because that's what your part of the role is, I do the producing, you do the publishing, you then tweet out a tweet on the N2K Podcast Twitter account saying, here's our latest podcast. And then you also do another tweet with that saying, hey, by the way, if you follow us, as in the N2K Podcast Twitter account, and also retweet that message, you will get $700 off the price of the ticket that it costs you to go to Microsoft Ignite in Australia. So we'll give you essentially a $700 discount. And so we've got limited numbers of these discounts available. We don't have like a unlimited amount, and some people have already taken us up on the offer already, so we've still got discounts left. And so that's pretty much all you got to do is retweet that tweet and follow us, and then we'll basically reply back with
the other big
message to say, here you go.
You know what the other big secret bonus is we didn't tell people about when we giving away these TechEd things?
What's that?
The secret bonus is they can meet you face-to-face at TechEd. I mean, at Microsoft Ignite.
Oh, that's like so exciting.
It is. Hands-on lab. Won't you be running hands-on lab?
You know, I think what's going to be more exciting is the fact that we might have a chance to meet Sonia Cuff.
Sonia, and I think we'd be trying also for Scott Guthrie. You've got your mission, if you choose to accept it, Mark, is to get a soundbite from Scott Guthrie.
Or Donna Sarkar.
There you go. Either of those. I'll give you one of those two. How about that?
All right, well, let's jump into our guest, Sonia Cuff. And Sonia Cuff is talking about her two sessions at Microsoft Ignite.
Sonia, welcome to the podcast. We have Mark in the background as well. But let's get Sonia, firstly, to introduce herself and then maybe let us know what sessions she will be conducting at the upcoming Microsoft Ignite Australia.
Sure, absolutely. Hello, everybody, and thank you, Robin and Mark, for joining you. Where do I start? Look, I've had quite a long career in tech. I can say that now. I've earned my stripes over the 20-year mark. So I started out in enterprise doing systems administration and architecture, and now I'm playing in the SMB space up in Brisbane. So we've changed focus with our business a little bit to more virtual CIO services in the SMB market within the last 12 months, and that's going great. So the sessions I will be putting on at Ignite are making SaaS part of your IT strategy. I know that the software as a service and cloud adoption in general is being pushed quite hard by the business, and the IT guys are trying to figure out how to make it all work in the background. And the other great, I think we win the award for the best title for an Ignite session with this one. I have the honor of presenting with Paul Woods from Adopt and Embrace on a session called The CEO Reviewed Your Project, and you won't believe what happened next. So I can't really tell you too much about that one. You might need to come along and find what happens in our clickbait session, as it were. But that's really talking about digital transformation and how IT has a different view of that than the business in terms of what is a successful IT project.
Okay, well, I might kick off with some questions here. So I know you can't sort of say what happened next, because that's obviously the reason why people are going to go and fill out your session and make it really, really full. But how about we start with the SaaS one? So let me guess, Office 365 or anything else?
It's a lot bigger than Office 365, and what I'm tending to find is the majority of people that come to an event like Microsoft Ignite are already dipping their toes in the water, at least with the Microsoft Cloud solution. So it's about taking the conversation bigger than that and looking at what are all the other SaaS offerings that are around there, and how do Microsoft products help you control informations and identities that might be going into those different services.
So I think that one of the big challenges with IT these days is obviously the identity management, and I think a lot of people don't realise that Microsoft plays a very critical role, obviously now with Azure AD, which is in some way, shape and form very much like the local AD. So, I mean, in your experience, you know, what are you seeing out there? Are people, you know, jumping on this and integrating, or are they treating all these SaaS applications as effectively individual silos with individual logins and basically making it hard for the users to be productive?
Look, identity is certainly one of the big pieces of the puzzle that we face as a challenge. And it's not uncommon for small businesses to run a whole vast different range of SaaS solutions for different things. So there really is a mix between how technology savvy your organization is and whether or not you've wrapped your head around sort of the single identity management, or whether or not you're still capturing those in silos. The great thing about this session is that it is more pitched towards people who are interested in the bigger picture around the adoption of SaaS. So we don't drill too deep dive into any one particular solution, but we look at the whole gamut of issues around SaaS in general, especially coming from an IT background where we're taught to control things. We're grown up with an environment that needs compliance and regulation and change control and all of those things that we have in place to protect the business and protect the infrastructure. And so to try and let all that go and to put your faith in someone else's SaaS product goes a little bit against the grain for us IT infrastructure type people. So we'll be talking about a whole bunch of different things that kind of make up that SaaS picture so that you can do it successfully within your business.
Okay, so on the subject of identities, now Azure, as you know, has in the cloud ADFS as a service, and there's about 300 or more SaaS applications that they've already put up there themselves, but you can also put your own custom apps up there now too. So is that something what you've been experiencing out there in the field, where a lot of the companies will make use of Azure AD with one single identity and then make use of the Azure AD single sign-on capabilities for the multitude of SaaS applications?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see that a lot of people don't realize that capability is there. I mean, you're talking about people that are adopting Office 365 that might not even realize that they've got Azure AD under the covers to start with. But then when you start extending with Azure AD Premium to see just that amount of control that you have with that single source of identity across all your SaaS apps, you know, that's definitely the way to go. And I think it's really easy for companies to try and do a bit of research around that kind of SaaS identity management management and start going down the path of third-party solutions. So there are a few competing products in that space that are independent of Microsoft that will give you one identity in the cloud across multiple services. But Microsoft brings such a great integration story, especially if you already have an on-premises Active Directory environment to pull all that stuff together. So it's about just opening people's eyes to realize that the great integration that they've got with the Microsoft product sets can extend more into the cloud and what they're doing with their other SaaS providers.
So is this in a way, under the covers, we're sort of talking about the conflict, if you want to call that, or the struggle between IT and the users and the management. So IT, as you mentioned, wants to control everything, wants it all locked down, wants it simplified, whereas users, again, want that freedom. We're now seeing them running around with devices outside the environment, using third-party applications they can sign up for almost immediately and start using in their business. And the poor IT person is then left to integrate it all, make it secure, and make it compliant. So under the covers, is this basically sort of saying, okay, this is how the IT people can work with the users and everybody can have their cake and eat it?
Yep, absolutely. Because the reality is, if we don't start doing IT at the speed of business, the business is just going to go out and do it without us. That shadow IT concept is a stark reality, as much as we hear it as a horror story. There's been a few cases of it popping up, and it might even be in your own organization and you not even realize it. But it's about getting IT to change their mindset. And quite rightly, those controls that we've had in place are there for a good reason. And it's not something that we want to go and just throw out the window. But we need to move from a mindset of managing devices to managing information and managing identities, because it really is easy for the business now. They used to have to go through a process of putting in a request and getting it approved and getting an admin to install something on a server. And now, you know, they fire up their browser, throw in their corporate credit card, and away they go.
It's difficult because I used to work for a company, won't mention any names, where they were the opposite of most of the other companies out there. They had everything in the clouds. They had no servers on-prem other than, you know, your local DHCP and the basic stuff. But everything else was in the cloud. So Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange Online, all of that sort of stuff was all in the cloud, Azure AD and stuff like that. All the devices weren't attached to the domain. There were work groups and all this sort of stuff. So that was the opposite. But we were fortunate enough in that company to have people that sort of knew enough to get by to install whatever they needed. However, most of the time, all the stuff they needed was already provided part of the Click to Run software. So in saying that, we've got one end of the spectrum where there is companies that are all using Microsoft Cloud and only Microsoft Cloud, and then you've got the other end of the spectrum, which is a lot of on-prem and a bit of hybrid. And so in your eyes, what do you see the sort of end goal or the ideal situation?
I think it's about coming to a place where you have the advantages of cloud, but you have the controls and the security and the processes to back that up. It's one thing to say that we have companies that are fully cloud and using all of this capability out of the browser, for example, even if they're not installing anything on their computers, which is getting more common now, especially for newer and smaller organizations. But there are a lot of IT type questions that any good operator and organization should have in terms of things like backup and control, and how is information stored in the cloud, where is it allowed to go from one service to another? What happens when an employee leaves? Do we have control over removing their accounts and disabling their access? So there are all of those little policy and control things that still do translate to the cloud. If you can come to a meeting in the minds where you have some complementary IT processes in place, even when you're not supporting the infrastructure, you still need to protect the identities and the information that you're putting out to the cloud.
All right, so let's bring in a bit of the secondary presentation you've got here around digital transformation. So are we saying, in essence, what we're looking for is an overall digital transformation for the business, the end users, how they operate, and then also for IT? So I think that what we're seeing now is that as much as a lot of IT pros probably won't like to admit it, we are going through a revolution here where that the way that it's being delivered, the services that are available are now coming from typically large data centers, whether it be Microsoft, AWS, or Google typically, and this is what users are demanding, are requiring, and it, you know, again, is the way. And that means that not only is the business got to digitally transform, which seems to be a much lower friction point for them, but the IT professional, that organization also has to transform themselves to stay relevant in this environment. I mean, is that a fair comment when it comes to this, the importance that, you know, inverted commas, digital transformation plays?
It's such a great buzzword, isn't it? Digital transformation. You're right. There are two sides to the coin. There's the digital transformation in terms of the IT professionals picking up new skills, and digital transformation in terms of how is the organization changing with this new technology. And this session really is about getting across concepts about, it's not the technology that counts, it's what you do with it. And the IT department can go ahead and put together a successful project, implement it beautifully, on time, on budget. But at the end of the day, the business will see success of new technology based on the results that it's getting from it. And time again, we see companies that adopt a new piece of technology, whether it's in the cloud or not, and then wondering 6 months down the track why it's not releasing all these amazing benefits in their organization that they were sold in the first place. And quite often, it's not the IT department that's to blame. So the software's in and it's working, or it's been provisioned in the cloud. But there has to be some user acceptance of how the business is going to change its processes. So, you know, I talk about things like, there's no point in upgrading the version of Office that you're using if you're going to use it like you're still using it 5 years ago. The business has to be open to changing the way that it works and adopting new features and processes if it wants to get some of the benefits out of the new technology that's out there.
So digital transformation, yes, I like the buzzword. It's fantastic. It's the first thing that comes to my mind because I'm sitting in an office now is a filing cabinet. And so a lot of offices these days have a whole bunch of filing cabinets. The next, a place I used to work at had heaps of filing cabinets and a lot of documents. Now, the thing is, right, if that place caught fire, they'd be screwed because it would be all up in flames. And I would bet you bottom dollar, and I knew for a fact they hadn't scanned all the documents. Now, a bit like Google Books back in the day where they had a U-Boot scanner and they went crazy and scanned all the books and whatever library it was, and it's all in Google Books. Have you seen that part of digital transformation where people are going to the extreme of, you know, the obvious quick win is to scan all their documents in their filing cabinets and put them all into the cloud?
To some extent, yes, but that doesn't seem to be as big a driver as businesses adopting new servicing channels for their customers or new ways of having conversations with their suppliers, for example. So we're more seeing people go down the path of digital transformation, usually quite heavily customer driven. So it's not so much about the back end office processes or getting rid of those large paper archives. It's more about enabling the business to serve the customer base the way that this generation of customers want to be serviced.
Okay. Is there a common framework that you find that you can apply to the IT professionals so they can get up to speed and all this sort of identity stuff, or the business? Is there, you know, some sort of steps to go through, a process and onboarding? Is there anything that can be applied as a general rule of thumb or process that people can follow to obviously ease them into this digital transformation concept?
Yeah, and look, there's a number of great resources from Microsoft to help with that, like the fast track process, and we'll talk about that some more in detail in the session, so you'll have to come along to find out. But I think from an IT professional perspective especially, the strategy that seems to have worked for me is to have a high level overview of what's going on and knowing where my resources are to deep dive when I need to. So, you know, there are a few key resources of Twitter feeds and websites and email subscriptions that just glance across my radar every day or so with the new announcements that are coming out. But there is such a volume of information, even just in the Office 365 products, with how much is changing, that you've just got to have a bit of visibility of what's going out, what's going on in the space out there, and then know where to go to research and deep dive in more when you want to delve into some particular things in depth.
So can you give us some examples of business processes that would change with digital transformation then?
As I said, one of the main things is customer communications. So if you start looking down the route of things like chatbots and how people want to complain to a brand, for example, or how they want to find out the opening hours of a store. So customer service is one of the big areas in business that is changing because of digital transformation and what the technology will help us do now.
Okay, so we're seeing obviously the implementation of these technologies, and as you mentioned before, we're seeing a lot of people who take on these technologies and again seem to use the common 5 or 10%. I mean, what's the way that we can sort of move people towards, you know, opening up their concepts or opening up the way they use these products? Or again, they tend to be very conservative in my opinion. They tend to want to do things the same old way because they think that they want to relearn something. They don't see it productive. So again, they're rather not looking to invest in the long term. What can we do to help them to understand that a bit of investment up front with learning and training is going to pay huge dividends down the track?
I think it really is about finding the key stakeholders in the organisation that can see the benefit and want to drive it forward. You've got to get high enough up that corporate food chain that you've got someone that's leading it. And then if they can be surrounded by a few people who really are comfortable with change and those early adopters of technology, it's about not boiling the ocean. I think it's about getting some quick wins on the ground with some people who are more likely to be positive about the change that's coming in the first place. And if you can start to get a few of those quick wins and show some tangible results, then the success of the project and the lifespan of it going forward is going to be a lot more successful.
So, okay, so with digital transformation, with that, it means quite a bit. And the other thing that's coming to my mind is the word innovation. Yeah, they've got quite a few things in common.
They do. And innovation is one of those other muddy words, I think, in terms of the fact that it means different things to different people. And you can sit down and think of innovation with the Silicon Valley goggles, you know, the self-driving cars and all of that kind of perspective. But we're really interested in looking at businesses that are innovating how they do what they do. And businesses that change how they deliver their services and how they communicate with people because there are new technologies on board, instead of still relying on the old outdated methods, that can be enough of an innovation in their business to completely change how their business was operating to really now being a proper 2017 type business.
So another factor I think that is involved in all of this is obviously the demographic. We've got, I suppose it seems to be a fair split in the demographic. We've got, you know, the millennials in inverted commas, the people of 30, round 30, who are sort of comfortable with technology and use it regularly. And then we have people of generally an older generation who have slowly seen technology come in or invade their workspace, if we want to put it that way. That brings up two very different sets of people and also two very different sets of needs and adoption processes. I mean, is that a fair comment? Do you have to treat those demographics differently? I think that you would probably agree that most of the C-level people, the people making the decisions, are of that older generation, the more traditional. Or are you seeing that those people are willing to drive the innovation, wanting to get results from their business, so they're prepared to invest in the technology because they appreciate that to be competitive they need to do it, even if they don't necessarily understand the full breadth of the technology? Is that sort of, you know, part of the thinking out there?
It's a funny question. It's actually more of the latter than the former. So I think as IT professionals, we tend to go in with this view that older people are stuck in their ways and, you know, are more comfortable with still running Windows XP. And it's the young kids that want to get in and do everything on social media. And I laugh at that as a woman in my 40s now who has a very strong social media presence and loves her technology and can outdo some of the young kids these days. So I do smile at it. But I think, you know, one of the challenges that we have as IT professionals is taking off those blinkers. We have very set ideas of what we think people's attitudes are, and that can even come down to having a preset idea about what they do in their role. So, for example, we might look at somebody in the marketing department and think, oh, they're really creative and they just want to use an Apple Mac and they don't care too much for the details. And yet we'll look at somebody in the finance department and go, well, they're very detailed oriented and, you know, they just want to sit and type at their computer all day and they live in Excel. And so if you really need to open your eyes and shrug off some of those preconceived ideas. I think one of the most interesting things about technology adoption is letting somebody in a role lead you to answers that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of. And they'll surprise you by showing you what they do in their role and coming up with exploring their technology together to come up with new solutions and better ways of doing things that you might not even have thought of that they will come across in their role. So yeah, it's an interesting one. And I think we all have that generational bias, but you've got to watch that it doesn't actually take you down a path that might not actually be the best path and restrict your view of thinking.
Good advice. So you mentioned yourself about Twitter and social media and giving the youngins a run for their money and stuff like that. So the question I have, I understand that you recently changed your job just recently. I think you put on social media. Did you want to quickly talk about that, where you were before and what you're doing now and how that's all going?
Sure. So I've been running a small managed services provider in Brisbane looking after the SMB market for the past 12 years. And we have very quickly realised that, as well as being a pretty crowded market, and there are a lot of good people in this space, you know, across Australia, what we're seeing businesses really struggle with isn't so much getting good IT support. It's getting good technology advice about what technology they should be using and how they should be using it in their business. So it's very much aligned with this digital transformation project of helping businesses adopt technology by reviewing their business processes and realigning them both together to get a better view. And so we've launched a business called The Missing Chair, which is the CIO role at the boardroom table that small businesses don't have. They don't have somebody helping them out with that technology strategy. And we've had a bit of fun with some personality of giving business owners advice on technology and news that's out there, all with a bit of personality. So it's been an interesting early days, but we're having a lot of fun with it.
So again, another case example of digital transformation. I think that's what, again, we seem to don't see a hell of a lot of, especially from traditional IT pros. They're very locked into, I think, a very staid way of doing business. And sure, that can bring in the revenue, that can be paying the bills at the moment, but I think we're seeing quite a dramatic change in the landscape. Again, social media is so important. We see in services like Office 365, things like Teams now is really starting to take off. It's really providing competition to running startups like Slack and those sort of tools. So this whole concept of conversation, people working together in a team and using the movie metaphor, they come together, they work on a project and they all leave and go off onto other projects, seems to be the way that we doing work these days. Rather than being a very linear, we do one thing, we do next, we do things in very siloed arrangements, it seems to me that one of the big requirements in the work environment today is this ability to work with multiple teams across multiple information sources. And really, we're going to struggle, I think, to do that linearly in the old inbox sort of manner unless we adopt some of these newer technologies and understand them. And I think that The example I use is I'm not a particularly huge fan of Facebook, but if you look at it from a business point of view, it certainly has the people, it has the volume, it has its abilities used correctly. It can be a very effective tool. So I think that's what you're talking about, is separating the business benefit away from, again, what the popular media or what other people tell you it's about. It's about understanding, diving deep, doing a bit of research and working out, okay, how can I use this technology or this service to improve my business, which is typically generate more profit. I mean, is that sort of a fair comment, or that sort of the way that we're looking at it?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I find that the majority of companies, that they don't necessarily have a problem with their technology. It comes down to basic things like, how do they communicate with their staff? Even for small businesses, we come across organizations that still don't have a great way of developing and editing and communicating policies and procedures. And that's a basic thing that you think a business would get right. But when businesses struggle with that kind of a basic thing, because they're too busy being a business and doing what they do, they tend to go and look for a technology solution to fix it. And it's not a technology solution that's going to fix a problem like that. It's a combination of the right technology product for their business, along with a business process and a whole way of working that actually fits their business. And it makes me cry when I see people asking for advice on what product they should have. You know, I have a small team, we need to work together, what should I use is the first question. Should I use Trello? Should I use Wunderlist? Should I use XYZ? And everybody will jump on board with their opinions. So, you know, it's like buying a car. You go and ask somebody for advice on a car, you'll get a bunch of different opinions, and those opinions are swayed by that person's experience that they've had with that particular product. So it's about trying to cut through all of that and work with businesses to really get to the heart of what's stopping them and what their challenges are, and wrapping that together with a technology solution so that the whole thing just works.
All right, so speaking of people like that, I mean, I'll ask you the other question, your way of dealing with difficult people. I'll give you an example. So the place I used to work, there was this IT manager who shall remain nameless, and we had file servers on-prem, map network drives, all that sort of stuff back in the 80s or whatever, or 90s, I should say. You know, all the classic on-prem stuff. So a SQL server on-prem, file server, email server, everything else, right? And basically, as soon as new stuff came out in the cloud, like SharePoint Online and the OneDrive for Business Sync client, all this sort of stuff, he didn't want to change. This person didn't want to change because he was scared that users were going to whinge and complain. They're going to cop more calls to the help desk, and they're not going to be happy with all this sort of stuff. So, with that in mind, how do you deal? How have you found the best way is to deal with difficult people who don't like change?
I find another customer.
Fair enough.
Look, one of the great things about our new business strategy is that we are looking for customers that are open to change. And I don't think you're going to convince everybody to adopt and adapt and to digitally transform their business. That's the interesting thing about the times that we live in. You'll see businesses that are open to doing it, and the ones that aren't are the ones that are going to be left behind, I think, no matter what field they're in. So
there's always one person in the company, though.
There is. And look, I think that's why it's really important that you've got the support of stakeholders that understand why this is going to make a difference to their business. If it's the top level person, if you don't have the backing of the C-level execs to actually make this project happen, then you're pretty much sunk in the water. You're dead in the water before you start. If you have their backing and it's the odd person like that that's going to dig their toes in, it's about just working with them and getting them to see that, okay, personality aside, if they don't like it, it's going to happen, and there are ways that you can maybe soothe their concerns or help address what their particular point issues are to a point. But at the end of the day, the C-levels are the ones that are responsible for driving the organisation forward, and so they have to wear the responsibility of toughening up and telling to the company this is how it's going to be. And it's quite interesting because often I see IT people that are chomping at the bit to go more cloud, and it seems to be sort of other areas of the organisation that are holding them back.
All right, so why don't we change gear here a little bit and let's talk about the Microsoft Ignite conference in general. You've been a couple of times. What's your sort of experiences with this as a conference, as a way to firstly gain technical information, improve the depth of your knowledge, but also the side benefits? So things like hallway networking, connecting with vendors, learning what other people are doing out there. And what sort of advice could you give to people who are looking to attend? How do you really get the most out of these style of technical conferences?
I was just trying to remember when my first Microsoft Ignite was. It's going back a while now, and I don't attend every year, I must admit, but
I can tell you that 3 years ago.
Hey?
3 years ago was the first one, I think.
Oh, yeah, but before there was TechEd before that. They have a long history,
believe me.
Yeah,
keep going,
that,
sorry.
Before that, it was TechEd. And look, the conference itself has changed over time. When I first went, it was very enterprise-focused. So if you were in anything, you know, any of us smaller in the SMB market, didn't even get a look in. Compared to now, there's a lot more available for the SMB market. There's SMB type get-togethers and vendors that are happy talking to SMBs, and a lot of sessions now where the product knowledge is transferable. So while we've got Office 365 plans that are aimed and affordable at the small business space right through to the enterprise, there is a lot of crossover in the products now that are applicable to both. As far as the conference itself goes, it's just a great time. It's great to be able to get out of the office. And though being in a position now, as I have for some time, where the office comes with me, unfortunately, there's nobody doing my job for the days that I'm at the conference. But, you know, the technology we've got now means that I can keep an eye on emails. People can Skype me if they need to. So I can get out there and sit in a room and listen to some good information without the distractions of the office phone ringing. I guess my top tip for getting the best out of a conference like Ignite is, and you're going to hate me for saying this, put your phone down. The best way to connect at this conference is actually to not be staring at your screen when you're standing in line waiting for some conference doors to open. It's about talking to the people that are around you, seeing how they're going, what they're enjoying, and really spend time connecting, even with the speakers. Track down a speaker after their session, and I know the time changeovers are really quick in those rooms between sessions, so you might not be able to have a half-hour conversation with them straight away. But the speakers do a really good job of making sure that they're available, eating in the trade show halls and they're around. So really make a point of connecting with a few people, especially if you know them online. So the conferences are a really good way to meet people that you might have been speaking with on social media or Twitter, for example. And those face-to-face conversations and those contacts, they're just invaluable. They're really great.
Okay, so being at Ignite and TechEd for a long, many, many times before, you would be well averse to how strenuous it can get, because you're there first thing in the morning, you're on your feet all day, and you're walking around talking to people, and it really does take a toll. And what is Sonia's tips on keeping the stamina going for the whole day?
Comfortable shoes, lots of water, not big drinking sessions of the night times. I think that's pretty much it. if you're more of an introvert, and I know that a lot of IT pros are, they're not really up to keeping up the energy levels for such a long day and being around so many people. It is quite acceptable to disappear back to your hotel room just to chill and have some me time for a while. It is a pretty full schedule, and there are some great recordings if you need to catch up later. So don't try and force yourself to be all things to all people if you need a bit of space. But yeah, certainly some comfortable shoes and an agenda that might give you a few breaks on your schedule, and yeah, just enjoy it.
All right, so as we are looking to round up, what about, is there anything that we've missed that you want to let people know about your two sessions, or when they can, how they can make contact with you when they do go to Ignite, what to look for, anything that we haven't covered as yet that you'd like to let our listeners know about, Sonia?
Well, sure. Look, I live on social media, as I said, so I will be tweeting. My Twitter handle is @cuff_s. If you want to track me down, I'll be using the Microsoft Ignite hashtag, and certainly feel free to just shout out if you want to catch up at Ignite. My personal website is soniacuff.com, and that will give you a little bit more information about the other events that I'm around and speaking at and attending. And yeah, just connect up and say hi if you see me in the hallway. There's not many Sonia Cuffs in the Microsoft technology space, so I'm certainly not averse to people saying, "You're that chick I heard on the podcast," and starting up a conversation. I'd love to meet with people.
That's because heaps of people listen to us. Sonia, thank you for your time, for coming on today. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
And Rob, thank you as well, as always.
No problems, Mark. Happy to facilitate.
And we'll catch you all next time. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.